The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
We are now a little over 2 weeks from the US election. It is as hot an election as it is possible to be. At least it is in terms of how close things are running. Because when you look at the swing states, you are every cliche in the book, knife edge, cigarette paper between them, all the rest of it. But that is where we are at. The two candidates are hopping back and forth among all of the swing states, Georgia and Michigan most recently, and the oddness of the whole thing continues unabated. In a couple of minutes, I'm going to be talking to Michael Moynihan, who's an editor and columnist with The Examiner, and he spent a week or so out in the states going round to get a sort of a feel on the ground of how the campaigns are running. But I'm joined first by Paul Brandis of West Wing Reports. He's the founder of West Wing Reports. He's a veteran member of the White House political correspondence group. And Paul, where we might start, I just wanted your view on this, because it's we'll get to the more sensible, but let's start with the ridiculous. Donald Trump at his rally, for some reason, decided that he needed to get into a discussion of how well endowed the late Arnold Palmer was.
This man was strong and tough. He took showers with the other pros. They came out of there. They said, "Oh, my God. That's unbelievable." I had to say it.
Paul, how did we end up here?
Well, it was such a bizarre thing, but it's since we're talking about Doug Goff, I'll say it's par for the course when you're talking about Donald Trump, because he does this sort of thing all the time, Anton. He goes off on these meandering, rambling talks about things that make no sense whatsoever. And in that clip that you just ran, you heard some people in the background that are giggling about it. But there are a lot of people who are really wondering whether, you know, this is more evidence of his cognitive function declining, that sort of thing. He refuses to release his medical records. He says he is sharp as a tack. His mental acuity is razor sharp, all that kind of thing. All evidence to the contrary, at least in the view of, well, the Democrats certainly think that, but there are even medical people who say, look, it doesn't quite seem right and this and that, but that's where we are. I mean, he's been doing this for years. On the other hand, he gave an interview with the Wall Street Journal, the very conservative business newspaper here, and they claimed that he was actually quite sharp during the interview he had with them. So there are opinions all over the map on this, but these sound bites are just bizarre. And he has these talks. He talked for an hour, 2 hours, just up and down and all around, and just hard to follow what he's saying sometimes. But the people, his base still adores everything that he does.
Can I suggest, Paul, maybe that it's even more than that, because it is broader than his base. When you look at the numbers in the swing states, I mean, Georgia, a state where he was accused of attempting to interfere in the last election and was accused of trying to find votes that didn't exist. He is within, what, 2% of taking the state. In Pennsylvania, the polls have him within 1%. In North Carolina, I think he's either even or ahead of Harris. Yeah. How is he doing so well when he faces multiple, when he is a convicted criminal, when there is the January 6th insurrection, when there is so much against him, he still manages to seem to succeed?
Well, I think that people, there are a couple of points to be made about that. One, I think a lot of voters have short memories. They don't remember the chaos of the Trump years, the 4 years when he was actually in the White House. That's the first thing. The second thing, though, is perhaps a more fundamental reason, and that is economics. People associate, whether it's accurate or not, they associate the Trump years with a good economy, low inflation, good job growth, and all of that. They forget the pandemic, which wiped out in two. I was just writing about this in a column. Right, the pandemic wiped out 22 million jobs in 2 months, killed more than a million Americans in over a year. Just a devastating event, and that really sparked the inflation that only just now has subsided. People forget that, though. They also don't seem to realize, Anton, that the economy in the United States now is actually doing quite well. The Economist and the Financial Times and other business papers calling it the envy of the world. Our GDP is growing, and I think at twice the rate of the other G7 nations, that kind of thing. The unemployment rate is rock bottom low. Inflation, as I mentioned, has come under control, on and on and on. People just don't seem to understand that. They just, I don't quite get it. It's good now, but they think it was better back then.
What are we likely to see, do you think, now over the next 2 weeks? Because obviously it's going to hot up. We're seeing celebrities come out of the woodwork endorse both candidates. We had Dennis Quaid recently for Trump. We had Usher coming out for Harris. We've had seasoned politicians coming out like Bill Clinton, like Obama, starting to stump for their candidate. Is it going to get much hotter in the next fortnight?
Well, I think that the vast majority of Americans have made up their minds a long time ago. You either love Donald Trump or you hate him. It's such a binary, polarizing figure. There's very little in between with him. It's either one way or the other. Harris, she still has the issue of trying to define herself to people who still don't know who she is, that sort of thing. I think the main thing here is, as I mentioned, most folks made up their minds about Trump a long time ago. There's a small and rapidly diminishing pool of undecided voters who don't know which way to go. And that is what these campaigns are battling over. Pennsylvania, Georgia, and Wisconsin, Michigan, and all the others. Now, that is where this campaign will come down to over the next 15, 16 days. These seven swing states, but most folks have made up their minds. There's a small pool of people who still have not made up their minds. And we're seeing all these, you know, as you say, these, you know, Obama and Clinton and movie stars and whatnot, you know, traveling all around trying to convince folks. But I'm not quite sure what impact it has, because it's so hard to get people to switch at this point. I mean, just I don't know. And these razor sharp polls, by the way, I'm not quite sure whether I believe them. If you aggregate them, they do indeed show a tight race, but there's some evidence that maybe the polling methodology in some is not quite right. We'll see. But
So which way do you think they're erring?
Well, I think they may be. If I had to guess, I might say they're erring. Well, you could make a case either way, but my instinct says if they're erring one way or another, they might be erring in benefit of Trump. I think it might be undercounting perhaps younger voters who are going to vote for, I think, Harris in significantly large numbers and might not answer phone calls from pollsters on their cell phones. Some polls still over-rely on landlines, which older people tend to have, that kind of thing.
Paul, thank you so much. And thank you for joining us at what is very early your time. That is Paul Brandis of West Wing Reports. He's the founder of West Wing Reports and a veteran member of the White House press corps. With me as well is Michael Moynihan, editor and columnist with The Examiner, who's been spending some time on the ground in the US. Michael, I had the chance a number of weeks ago to travel through much of the Rust Belt and all of the border states. And I'm interested to see what your view was. I was very intrigued by the gap between all of the noise and activity at network TV levels and the apparent lack of interest on the ground. I didn't see anything like the passion for Trump that there was in 2016. You spent some time in the Northeast. Was that what you saw or the opposite?
I have to say I kind of inclined to the opposite, Anton. I was expecting actually the reverse. I was expecting a certain level of apathy. I was out in Long Island, for instance, which many listeners will know is quite a residential area outside New York. And I was amazed. I was collected from the train station by someone who brought me around, and I saw some paraphernalia which was so pro-Trump. I won't burn the ears of your listeners with some of the language on the flags. But I was surprised, because I would have expected, lazily perhaps, that the passion for Trump would be evident in places like, you know, that you've mentioned, maybe that have been left behind a little bit, maybe on the border where, you know, kind of immigration is maybe more of a live issue. But there was a real depth of feeling, a real kind of passion for the Trump causes, put it that way, that I was not expecting, all the way down to a MAGA store that I visited, which I have to say was absolutely eye-opening.
Now, can you explain one bit of this, Michael? When you talk to people there, and you have the sort of the European lens, and I think a lot of the European lens, a lot of the Canadian lens, is the how have we ended up in this kind of situation? It seems a bizarre race. It seems extraordinary that you can have a criminal still be neck and neck as a possible president. When you put that to people, what do they say?
See, this is the interesting thing. And actually, that MAGA store is the key to it, because you're looking for policies or coherent theories of economy, whatever you're doing. It is actually a cult. And that's how someone explained it to me. And I couldn't find a better explanation. It's a complete investment in one person's personality. And the supporting mechanisms, as Paul was saying, the kind of rambling speeches, the court dates, they're all part of the mythology. When I went to this MAGA store, I went with the intention of speaking to the owner or manager in a kind of, hey, nod, nod, wink, wink, you know, you're fleecing the rubes, good man. But actually, it's completely unironic. And they wouldn't have had a sense of humour about that at all. And I think, you know, for me, that was the eye-opening part of the trip. The fact that by, as you say, looking through a European lens at the Trump policy on economics or integration, anything like that, that's a mistake. It's all vested in him as a personality.
Can I ask
cult is the best way.
Yeah, oddly, I think when we talk cult, it is taken to be intrinsically pejorative. It's taken as an abusive term. Essentially, is it like a club? Is it that it provides people a sense of belonging, a sense of community? You know, if you take it in a non-negative sense, is that what they get from it? Is that why they're so committed?
I would say so, because it's probably something coherent and cohesive for a lot of people who feel disenfranchised and disconnected. What was interesting, I attended a demonstration between pro and anti-Trump groups at a crossroads in Long Island. And what was interesting to me was the pro-Trump side of the demonstration had other flags. They had kind of Blue Lives Matter, Israel flags, etc. So, you know, they take their lead, it seems to me, from Trump's position on these matters, and they fold that into then a kind of a blanket of causes that they rally behind. But certainly that group think is very much there. There was a lot of MAGA hats and T-shirts, etc. There were far less enjoyable aspects of that shop. I won't get into the bag of Trump hair that you could buy, but certainly that sense of we're all in this together, we've been ignored for so long. You go back to Hillary Clinton's reference to deplorables in 2016, and you can see that that's an animating principle as well.
I'm sorry, I know I shouldn't, but I can't resist. Was the bag of Trump hair real or was it fake?
Look, I have to say it was a really hot day, okay? And the bag was very much like, you know, those bags of flaxseed you can get in the supermarket to sprinkle on your porridge in the morning. I really didn't feel well. I didn't really get close enough to examine it because I just felt the whole day could go downhill. But the point about those things is they're not the kind of kitsch souvenirs you'll get on Broadway in a, you know, and readers will, or listeners will be familiar with these tourist shops. You're going to buy your NYPD t-shirt. You can get your Harris t-shirt, your Trump t-shirt. This is serious stuff. I mean, these are bobbleheads, which are costing $50, $60. These are pictures of Joe Biden in a dress and describing him as China's BITCH. You know, it's not funny and it's not ironic. And that's what really brought it home to me, the seriousness of it. And I think speaking to a few people, more than one made the point to me that there are a lot of people who are voting in the ballot for Trump, but who don't volunteer their support of him in conversation, which is, I think, speaks to what Paul was saying about the whole kind of these polls may not be quite on the money.
Well, that's going to be very interesting to see how it shakes out, because, of course, the polls got it so off back in 2016. And of course, this has an even greater level of risk, because if the polls get it off and it gets more of what we got on January 6th and more of a sense that an election has been stolen, who knows where we will end up. Michael, thank you so much for your time this morning. That is Michael Moynihan, who is editor and columnist with The Examiner. If you want to get in touch, 53106 or 087 1400 106. We got a text from somebody describing themselves as an American listener saying, we had four of him and four of her. She has been a disaster, has the lowest favorability of any VP ever.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.